Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. Great to be back with you again. Hope you enjoyed last week's episode with Ryan Jensen. And now we're going to focus on a man who's had a fascinating life in football. Frank Reich spent 14 seasons as a quarterback in the NFL, primarily as a backup for the Buffalo Bills team that lost 4 Super Bowls in a row in the early 1990s. He won a Super Bowl as an assistant coach with the Philadelphia Eagles. He's now embarking on his 4th year as the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Just a great football story that we're going to tell you, and you can get all your football stories as well. And I'm going to give you a seamless link into our new sponsor, which is NFL Game Pass. And you can follow all the preseason games there, Hard Knocks with the Dallas Cowboys. You can get all the NFL Network programming. It's such a valuable tool for me during the regular season, where I can watch all the games in just 40 minutes and watch coaches film to get the tactical analysis from each weekend. So great to have NFL Game Pass on board. It was really good to catch up with Frank Reich, and I came away with the impression that his Indianapolis Colts are in very good hands. Here's my conversation with Frank Reich.
Yeah, football was a huge part of my life growing up. My parents were school teachers. My dad was a football coach. I have a younger brother. So grew up in a neighborhood where that was the thing to do, go out in the backyard and play football. So I always remember, you know, watching my heroes like Joe Namath. I was a big New York Jets fan. Joe, it's the first Super Bowl I remember. Roger Staubach, Terry Bradshaw were some of my heroes growing up.
Interesting you name a couple of the quarterbacks there. And then you were a high school quarterback in Pennsylvania. Were you aware of all of the great Pennsylvania quarterbacks that went before you, or were you kind of just foolishly young and not thinking about it?
Well, I think, like, to your point, I think I was foolishly young and not thinking about it, but it didn't take long before I was making that note. I was probably in high school, you know, with dreams of doing that one day and thinking and looking at all these great QBs that came out of the state of Pennsylvania.
Did you always play quarterback when you were young? Did you always want to be a quarterback? Whether I always it was did. Backyard or?
Yeah, actually, I started out as a running back when I was in Little League and actually played offensive line for 1 year, played guard. But I pretty quickly migrated to quarterback early on. And so that's always been my passion.
Tell me about college football. And I guess there was a bit of a theme there because you went to Maryland and you backed up a really good quarterback in Boomer Esiason. And that would be, a forerunner for what you would do in the NFL with the great Jim Kelly. What was it like, that college football experience, to go from high school? Because not many people get to make that journey, do they, from high school to college?
No, it was a great journey. I had great years at the University of Maryland, was recruited by a great football coach, Jerry Claiborne, who really learned a lot from. And then Bobby Ross then came, and I had him for 3 years. He was a great man and a great coach as well. But really, it was at Maryland. You know, I came from a small farm town, so I went to when I went to Maryland, that was a big jump for me. I mean, that was a culture shock for me. And I got to be roommates with Boomer Esiason. And so it was not only backing him up, we were best friends. And, you know, just felt like I learned a lot of football in those years of college. You know, we ran a pro style offense and learned so much football, was around so many good players, and we won and had a lot of fun, and we were a good team. And it was a great experience.
I'm going to talk about a couple of, I'm going to put a couple of comebacks together here, Coach, one in college and one in the NFL, which I'm sure you've talked about many times. But in college, you were down by 31 points at the half against the Miami Hurricanes. You came back to win. Of course, end of the 92 season, the wild card game, the largest comeback in NFL history. You're down 35-3 to the Houston Oilers. You lead that comeback. For just putting the two together, and then we'll talk about them separately. What does it take to make a good comeback? What does it need?
Well, I'll tell you what. Being a part of two historic comebacks like that, you know, the common threads, I think, are a few things. Number one, it was great coaching. I believe that both of those head coaches, Bobby Ross and Marv Levy, had the kind of mentality that had the team in a position to accomplish something like that. So, but I also think it took those kind of same players. And when you're down by that many points, you know, this isn't like some other sports where one guy can just take over a game. I mean, we really needed to be, when you're down by 31 points or 32 points, you can't just be good on offense or just good on defense. You got to be good in all three phases. You got to make big plays in all three phases to come back. And so when I look back at those two games, that happened. You know, we made big plays in all three phases, and we're almost nearly flawless as a team for a half of a football. So, and then the last thing I would say was the mentality was one play at a time, one touchdown at a time. That's a big deal.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, that was going to be my next question, because I guess you don't want to press too much, but are you thinking we've got to score quickly, or do you literally say, let's complete this 7-yard pass, let's complete this 5-yard pass? Does it have to be that way in bite-sized chunks?
Yeah, it really does. I believe that with every part of my being. It's like, literally, let's make one first down, you know, then let's score one touchdown, and let's just one play at a time. That's the mentality that I took. I mean, I learned that lesson as a young boy. My dad, I'll make this story short, but my dad put a big pot, had a dump truck load of dirt, and he put a wheelbarrow and a shovel out there, and he told me to move that. You know, I was 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever, and I was like, Dad, I can't possibly move this in a day. It might have been two dump truck loads. I don't know. It was just this big mound of dirt. And he taught me a very valuable lesson that day. He said, Frank, the way you move mountains is one shovel full at a time and one wheelbarrow full at a time. And so little did I realize how much that lesson he taught me would help me in football and also help me in life as well.
How did you stay calm in the Buffalo situation? You're down 35-3 at the half. It had been Jim Kelly's offense. It was a kind of record pace offense. And then you're in there and it's 35-3. And, you know, how do you not crumble there, Coach? How do you kind of be able to do that and bounce back? Do you think that comes from Marv Levy and the coaching and the belief?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think it's, you know, being on the team with your teammates. And I think some of it just comes through, you know, through your own personal conviction and your own personal habits, you know, over years. It's not something you just did the last week. It's something that's built into you over a long time, something that you've practiced and that you believe in a long time, that something like that can happen, you know. And you know it's not about any one person. You know it's not just about you as the quarterback or whatever position that you play. But I think there's something about having that mentality to really believe that kind of stuff is possible.
Now, what's an NFL life story without talking about being drafted? We've gone down that route with many of our guests on this podcast, and it's no different with Frank Reich. Well, it sort of is, though. The now Colts head coach was drafted in 1985 by Bill Polian of the Buffalo Bills. And despite drafting him for his roster, it was Polian who identified Reich as a coach for the future. Indeed, he even went on to employ him on his staff many years later.
I really credit Bill Polian for, you know, much of my career. You know, he drafted me to Buffalo and then hired me as a coach. And he saw that in me early. But yeah, I appreciated and respected the vision that he had. You know, he told me, he said, hey, play as many years as you can, and when you get done, I'm going to ask you to come coach for me. But it really started even before that, because, you know, as I said, my dad was a coach. And I mean, I so looked up to my dad. He's such a great man and such a great coach that, that's always what I always envisioned myself doing that one day. I wasn't sure how or where, if it'd be in the NFL, but I think Bill Polian helped give me a vision for doing it in the NFL.
Coach, you have a fascinating story. Obviously, the coaching side we'll get to in a second, but as a player, the quarterback is at any level, the alpha male, and they're so competitive. I've seen this in all the years I've interviewed dozens and dozens of quarterbacks. They're so competitive. So how did you kind of balance being a competitor and wanting to be the best you could be, but kind of knowing there was a Hall of Fame quarterback in Jim Kelly ahead of you? So how was that for you kind of internally, or did you kind of come to peace with that situation?
No, you're right. As a competitor, I mean, there's nothing you want more than to be out there playing. But what supersedes that is being a great teammate and being about the team first. And that's the key. And that was, you know, I credit my parents for, you know, really teaching me that early on, that the team comes first. And also that, hey, just, you know, be the best you can be in the role that you're playing. And you can have a great life, a great career, be extremely happy, doing your job and on a great team, which I experienced in Buffalo. I wouldn't trade those years for anything. I probably had, if I had had the chance, maybe gone somewhere else. And I like to think I was one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the league and could have been starting somewhere else, but it just didn't work out like that. So I was extremely appreciative and thankful for the years in Buffalo to get to back up a guy like Jim Kelly, who's to this day still a great friend. And I learned so much from him, you know, playing with him and being his, you know, being teammates with him. So it was a blast, but no mistake. I mean, I want to be out there every play.
Right. Yeah. He came over to London. We did a bunch of events together. Just one of the nicest guys in the world. I mean, you would not think he was a superstar quarterback, just so down to earth. You must have just really enjoyed that time with him.
Tremendously. We became best friends and, still to this day, so much respect for Jim, you know, what he's done on the field, but more than that, you know, just his whole story. I mean, his whole story is starting from when he was young and his family and his upbringing. And there's so much to see and respect about his life and what he's accomplished.
What was it like to go through those Super Bowls, Coach, when you four straight Super Bowl losses? One of the privileges I've had covering the NFL was to interview Marv Levy. And he actually really enjoyed speaking to me because he's fascinated with Great Britain and Winston Churchill. So I think he actually enjoyed that. But he said, you guys had the intestinal fortitude. I'll never forget the phrase he said. You had the intestinal fortitude to get up every time. But it must have been so tough, because to lose one is bad. Then to lose four in a row. How did you kind of stay together as a team?
You know, it's funny. I didn't realize then how hard it is to go back a second year and then a third year and a fourth year. And then the further more removed you get from that, see how hard it is just to get to one. You know, just get to one, then you start to appreciate what it took to get to four in a row. And, you know, I just think that intestinal fortitude was certainly the core group of players on that team, but it really started with Marv Levy and Bill Polian, those two guys, the leaders of the organization, you know, the head coach and the GM. You know, you get to know those two guys and you want to talk about men who have great intestinal fortitude. And then so what I think happens is, since they're the ones shaping the roster and developing the team, as the old adage goes, it takes one to know one. Because they possess those traits, they very easily see those traits in players that they pick for their team. And that's how I think that's a big part of why that's all possible.
It's funny, isn't it? With the passing of time, that Buffalo team now is looked at as one of the greatest of all time. Doesn't have a trophy there for that period, but would be looked back now as one of those teams.
No doubt. And I think we all know that. And sure, it would have been nice to win one of those Super Bowls. But I think we know what we did and accomplished was something special. And I think the way we did it, the resiliency to come back 4 years in a row. And really, when you think about it, even in not that you get partial credit for this, but even in 88, we went to the AFC Championship game. Yeah. So it was really a 6-year stretch there. In 89, we, you know, lost in the first round of the playoffs, and then we had that 4-year run. So we had a 6-year stretch there where that team was pretty stinking good.
Now, it wouldn't be an NFL season or, in fact, any NFL Sunday without scenes of Buffalo Bills fans tailgating before matches. Their rituals of covering themselves in ketchup and mustard, throwing themselves on tables, are the stuff of legend in fan circles. It's really a crazy place to be with a crazy fan base to play for.
Yeah, and of course, you know, back in those days before stadiums were so much luxury boxes, there weren't as many luxury boxes. So there was that stadium would seat 80 plus thousand people. And there was just nothing better than playing in that stadium during those years with 80, you know, that stadium being sold out and having 82, 83,000 people just going crazy. You know, and then walking out after the game through the parking lot after a big win, and you know, and I mean, it's just insane. The fan base was insane.
You also played, obviously, Carolina, the Jets, the Lions. Carolina was an expansion team. You threw the first touchdown pass in that team's history. Do you know who caught that pass?
I sure do. Pete Metzlars.
Yeah, another old Bill, right?
Another old Buffalo Bill.
What was it like playing for an expansion team? Was there kind of some bumps in the road there in terms of everything getting set up?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked me. That was a very cool experience, you know, to go to a football team and to play in the first game ever in the history of the franchise. I mean, starting from scratch and building a football team and, you know, being the first starting quarterback, that was a great privilege that I had. You know, I had a chance to get to know, you know, Mr. Richardson as an owner, you know, and just see and hear his vision for that team early on, and which I really think helped that team to have very early success. I mean, we didn't have a whole lot of success our first year, but it wasn't, you know, and I think in year two, they had a ton of success. So it was a great experience. I remember those teammates. You know, I think we shared that unique experience together of being on, helping to start a franchise.
This is where I think all those things, that's why I asked if you kind of kept a book of it, because everything was like a little bit of experience. And I don't know if you're just storing it away in your head as you go through your career.
I wish I would have done that. I always had in mind that I would be a coach, but I do regret, you're right, I do regret that, like, I kept some binders, but, like, I would have kept all that film. I would have kept all that film, you know, and I let some of that slip away.
As long as you remember it, you can pass it on. You had a break from the, after you finished playing, you moved away from the game. What did you do there before you came back as a coach?
Yeah, did two things. You know, one, went into full-time ministry, and really traveled the country, all over the country, getting a chance to speak, you know, using the platform of a former ex-NFL player to go about and talk about my faith and how it was really important in my life and what difference it made to me as a football player, as a husband, as a father. So that was very important to me. I did a few business things as well. I'm a kind of entrepreneurial spirit. So started and owned and operated a couple of businesses, you know, and then just really, you know, but stayed involved with the game in that my brother was coaching. And so he was coaching right down the road. So I'd go down to him. I'd still do football camps and still stay involved in football in that regard.
And you still perform wedding ceremonies occasionally now, right?
Yeah, I did. I ended up going to seminary, you know, as I was traveling and speaking. I'm like, it was the football player in me that made me realize, hey, if I'm going to go do this all the time, I need to be better equipped. So I started taking some seminary classes. When I started taking the classes, I really didn't think I was going to go through the whole program and get a degree. I thought I'd take a handful of classes to help equip me to grow and get better. And I enjoyed it so much, I ended up getting a degree, Master of Divinity degree, got ordained. And yeah, probably one of the funnest and most enjoyable things I do is to officiate a wedding occasionally, which I'll be doing that this summer for my youngest daughter, have a chance to officiate my youngest daughter's wedding. So I have three daughters and I've had a chance to officiate. So I'll, God willing, have a chance to officiate all three of their weddings.
So will you walk her up the aisle and then officiate as well?
Brilliant. Yeah, it's really cool. You know, you walk her down the aisle and then you kind of flip over and play that other role. And it's pretty special.
We'll be back after this short break on the Neil Reynolds podcast, so don't go anywhere.
Hello, everyone. Producer Gary here. As you would have heard at the top of the show, we are in partnership with NFL Game Pass for the 2021 season. So here's Neil with some more information.
Watch the new series of Hard Knocks featuring the Dallas Cowboys with episodes available on NFL Game Pass free. Featuring Jerry Jones, Dak Prescott, Mike McCarthy and more, Hard Knocks is your invitation to witness the ups and downs of a team preparing for the season. Available to watch live and on demand, sign up for NFL Game Pass to catch all the action for free.
And now with that public service announcement done, let's get back to the show.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Welcome back to the Neil Reynolds Podcast and my chat with Indianapolis Colts head coach Frank Reich. Now, before the break, Reich spoke of his desire to officiate the weddings of his three daughters, outlining how important family is to him. Being a head coach of an NFL franchise obviously means time away from loved ones, though, but the unpredictable nature of life in elite sport can also mean being unable to really set down proper roots.
Yeah, no, it's not an easy trek. I mean, people look at you now as the head coach of the Colts and think of it, wow, you got the great job. And I do. The greatest job in the world as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, there's a price to pay for that. You know, there's a lot of ups and downs. And to your point, that's why after I finished playing after 14 years, I knew I wanted to coach. But our children were all really young, and I didn't want to subject them when they were that young to all of that. So early when I retired, my daughters were 8, 6, and 2. So what I did was I basically took 7 years after football to go to seminary, to do full-time ministry, to do some business things. And to do that, and one of the primary reasons to do that was so that I could go to their, help them with their homework, go to their swim meets and be there with them when they were young. So as they got older, then when I finally got into coaching and we had those moves, just felt like they were at a position to be able to handle that. And we were able to do it in a good manner.
As you moved into coaching, and it probably still applies today, actually, do you kind of sometimes say to the quarterback, give me that football, I'll show you how to throw it in the net. Oh, let me get that, have my hand on that football. Or do you kind of, did you really kind of have to force yourself to step back and use your words maybe?
Yeah, no, there was I remember a time when I don't remember exactly who it was with, but trying to do something like that to demonstrate something. And I would go to throw the ball and the ball slipped out of my hand and I look like a complete idiot.
Oh no.
You know, and like, all right, maybe I should limit my demonstrating days, but no, I still would get out there and throw. I still like to do that occasionally. You know, even at 59, I still, you know, there's still that part of me as the ex-player that thinks that I could go out there and play a game at 59 years old and still get it done. I mean, I just think that's what's great about the sport. But no, I've learned to curb my enthusiasm for demonstration and let these young guys show us what they can do.
How special was it to win the Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles? I guess for a number of different things that kind of tie back to your time with Buffalo. The fan base is incredible in Philadelphia. You would be able to have a relationship with the backup quarterback, Nick Foles, who was thrust into the spotlight and won that. And also, you lost it 4 times. So to finally win it and be there in that locker room under the confetti, all of that stuff, what was that whole experience like? And do you think you did have a kind of connection with Nick Foles because of that, because of what you'd been through?
No doubt. I had a great connection with Nick and with, you know, obviously with Carson as well. But, you know, Nick through that run there, you know, in a special way. And I guess, I mean, you know, being a man of faith, you know, I always thought to myself, hey, it'd be great to win a Super Bowl, but okay, it's not the most, you know, my life can be complete if that doesn't happen. But then when we actually won, it was so stinking incredible. It was incredible. It was just an incredible experience that, is hard to put into words. And like you said, the relationship with all the players, my family running out onto the field, you know, after the game, I'll never forget that, taking pictures, holding the Super Bowl trophy with my family, with the other coaches, you know, the embrace that I had with Doug Peterson after the game, you know, 'cause we were super close. Those kind of things. That was a special year and special game and moment.
Did you think back to your playing days in that moment, or was it just about being in the moment?
I think it was just about being in the moment, you know. Now, you know, as the celebration started to wane a little bit, I couldn't help think of some of my old teammates, you know, and coaches and, you know, kind of in some way sharing that with, and then they're all texting me, you know, they're all texting me and happy for us. And so that was pretty special.
How many more things come across your desk now you're a head coach?
Quite a few, you know, quite a few. But, you know, fortunately, when you work for a good organization, you know, you get a lot of help. It's not a one man show. You know, in the NFL, it might look like it's a one man show, like the head coach is the end all be all. But in reality, it's never a one man show. And you lean on the people that are here to, we're here to do this together. And, you know, as the head coach, you bring leadership, you know, that's important and in your own way. But, you know, you also understand, you know, the importance of having really good people to work with.
Your first season, you started off 1-5. So you've had in-game comebacks. How do you have an in-season comeback? Because you made the playoffs. How do you kind of keep that all together? And especially your first year in the big chair, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, that's actually really cool. I mean, you know, it's the same mentality, you know, one play at a time, one game at a time, right? I mean, that our motto that year kind of became 1-0, you know, get 1% better, just 1-0. And it doesn't help when it doesn't hurt, when you have a quarterback named Andrew Luck, who is not so bad at comebacks himself. And he really embodied that same mentality, but really the whole team did. And that was a very like unique and special year to me to like you said, I've been a part of these comebacks where you do it in one game, but to do something that's that sustainable over the course of a season, you know, when you got to win 9 out of 10 games to make the playoffs, that was in its own right, a very unique and memorable experience.
How did you deal with Andrew's retirement right on the eve of the following season? I've known Andrew for a number of years. I know Oliver very well. So I kind of know the family, and from 4,000 miles away, you're kind of pleased for him because he needed to get out, right? But for you, you're a friend to him. So you're probably on one hand pleased for him. You know, he wants to get on with the rest of his life. But as a football coach, you're also like, it's Andrew Luck, right? So how did you kind of balance being his friend and being his coach there?
Yeah, well, first, Neil, it was, you know, about being his friend first and foremost, you know, and that's what made it easy. I mean, and because I had just gotten to know him a little bit, and for the year and however many months we worked together, you get close enough that, you know, we had some of those talks and you know, just I felt a real peace that he knew what he was doing and that it took a lot of courage to make the decision that he made. But he made the right decision for him. And, you know, as a coach, yeah, I mean, you realize you're losing a once in a lifetime quarterback, but it's the, you know, there's the challenge of, okay, let's go. I mean, you never know. I mean, this is the epitome of, you never know what's going to happen. So, so just continue to learn from that.
People always used to ask me, is Andrew going to appear on American TV as soon as he's finished in the NFL? I said, he'll disappear off the grid and be quite happy. He's perfectly happy in retirement, yeah. Away from the spotlight.
He totally is. And I'm really happy for him.
Now, another well-known quarterback to have worked under Frank Reich is, of course, Philip Rivers, the former San Diego Charger who spent last year with the Colts before heading into retirement. Now, if you cast your minds back to the final episode of season one of this podcast, Austin Eckler spoke about his relationship with Rivers and hearing up close the trash talk the quarterback is known for.
It made me laugh every time. It made me laugh every single time. My favorite moment, I scored like an 84-yard touchdown and he got like knocked down and he got up and started screaming 90-yard touchdown right in this guy's ear. And the guy's like, you don't have to say it in my ear. He's like, I will say it in your ear. That was great.
Wright counts himself as someone who also appreciates that side of Rivers' character.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's his fire. It's contagious, you know. I think that's what we all love about him. You know, and even as he got older, I mean, he just never lost that competitive juice and fire that he has. So he just came in here in a very unique way, took leadership of this team and, you know, played, had a fantastic year. You know, led us to an 11-5 season. And I'm super close with Philip. I mean, just a great, great quarterback, but a great man, great family man. So what a year. It was a lot of fun.
Do you think you'll see him on an NFL sideline in the future as a coach?
Well, no, I mean, I'll see him. We'll see him on high school sideline.
Yeah, exactly.
Going to coach high school football. I don't know if I think he's going to be perfectly content to, you know, coach high school football and, you know, coach his children. You know, he's got a few of them. Yep. So he'll have a chance to coach a couple of them. So, yeah, I mean, he's just an incredibly talented person. You know, he's going to succeed at whatever he does. I'm just really happy for him, and knowing as a high school coach the impact that you have on young men, and, you know, and the people in that school who he'll impact, men and women, will be really great for that community.
Moving forward, looking ahead to 2021, you've got Carson Wentz now. Of course, you were with him in Philadelphia, and you've got a team that's grown to be a very good team. First of all, tell me about Carson and then how you feel about this season.
Yeah, really, really pumped up about it. I mean, obviously, Carson is he's a big time player. I believe he's a top 10 quarterback. I know last year was a rough year, but, you know, it happens to the best of them. And I think there were unique circumstances in Philadelphia that led to that. You know, no one person is to blame. It was a variety of things. But I think when you look at the body of his work, I still see a top 10 quarterback who loves the game, who works hard, who has big time playmaking possibility, who's an incredibly smart player, and a great teammate and great leader. So I'm really looking forward to working with him again. I mean, we have a very close friendship. And and I just think the fit is right here in Indianapolis. I mean, he's from, you know, North Dakota. I mean, this guy's a Midwestern guy. He just fits this part of the country. I think he fits our fan base. I'm excited.
People talk about your team, obviously, as toughness. So you've only got to watch Quentin Nelson block somebody to see you've built toughness. You've got DeForest Buck, you build on the lines, but your family as well, right? You hear that always mentioned about the team you've built, the culture, the family. Was that something that yourself and Chris Ballard kind of went out of your way, or went out of your way, because that was probably something you always planned to do, but it was a key part of what you were building?
Absolutely a key part. You know, that character matters. And, you know, we said early on that the three foundational pillars were going to be trust, you know, toughness, and team. And so, and trust is so central. And, you know, trust is really, you know, it's about integrity. It's about keeping your word. It's about, you know, having some humility, you know, guys at this level really don't lack confidence. But where I find where we talk about where the secret sauce is when you get an extremely confident player who also has a very strong streak of humility in him. You get that combination of humility and confidence, which we have in a lot of our players. I think that creates a culture that is pretty dynamic.
A couple just to finish up, Coach, just all different aspects of the job. Is it easier? I'm sure it's never easy. Do you have more empathy when you're cutting a player, having been a player, or do you think you suffer more knowing what that guy took to get to the NFL? Does it pain you more, do you think, because you've been there, or does it help you having been there?
Well, it, probably both, but it's painful. I mean, it's painful because especially if a guy's been here for a year or two and, you know, or longer, and you got a chance to know him close and then you got to part ways. It never gets easy. It doesn't get easier as you go through it more. So what I've just learned through the years is just got to be open and honest with guys, you know, and really present a picture of that. Although it may not be working out here, right here at this time, there's other places it'll work out. And oftentimes, sometimes that ends up being a good thing. And we've all experienced that in many ways. I've experienced it probably more so in the coaching realm than in the playing realm. But sometimes you end up losing a job and you end up going somewhere else and it gets that much better.
What makes a good quarterback? They're all different, the way Philip throws or the way some other quarterback runs. But are there certain things that everyone needs to have?
Yeah, there's a handful of things, I think. I think, you know, the first one is toughness. You need to have mental toughness. You know, you talk about smarts, but you got to be tough. You got to be able to come back from bad games, bad seasons. The second one, you know, I would talk about would be accuracy. You got to be incredibly accurate. You know, a third one that I would think about to make a great quarterback is you got to have this kind of unique playmaking ability. You know, you got to have unique playmaking ability. And then the fourth one that I think about is all the great quarterbacks that I've been around, they all have good feet and they all have good finish, you know, upper body finish. So they have good mechanics, you know, they're good fundamentally and technique wise. And they work hard at it. So, and that's really important. You got to be fundamentally sound because the game is so hard and you get put in so many precarious situations that it has to be automatic. And then the last thing is the X factor that I would say, you know, you got to have that X factor, that it factor. And really I look at that as do you make are your teammates better because you're in the game? Do you make your teammates better because you're in the game? So those are five things I've always thought were important for a quarterback.
The last one's a little bit of speculation, Coach. And I know coaches, they're black and white, wins and losses. So it's hard to speculate and to guess what might have happened. But do you think you're a better coach because you were a backup quarterback for certain spells? You had challenges, you had bumps in the road as a young coach. Do you think all of those kind of, I guess, calluses that get put on you, do you think they made you a better coach? And I know you don't know what you would have been if you'd have been a 15-year Pro Bowler, but I'm just wondering if you feel that's helped you get to where you are now.
I do think it has helped me in that way. You know, and it's the hand that I was dealt, you know, and it's the hand that, so you play it the best you can, but I think the struggles, I think the, you know, understanding the importance of every player on the team and every role and that, you know, and as a backup player, I really believe that I had a significant impact on those teams just in playing my role. So now as a head coach, and then schematically and just X and O wise, I felt like, you know, I was always being another assistant coach. So it was preparing me that way as well. But, so I think in all those ways, just from a mentality standpoint, from the struggles, but also from being humbled, you know, it's, you know, you're being humbled when you're the backup quarterback. Like you said, I know how great Jim Kelly was, but like in my mind, I was every bit as good as him, you know? And back in those days, like if we're going to go out and have a throwing contest, I felt like I was going to compete and win. So you, in a sense, you're humbled. In a sense, you're humbled. And I think that there's some good things that you learn through going through that process.
So there you are. It's my conversation with the Indianapolis Colts head coach, Frank Reich. Really enjoyed catching up with him. But now this is the moment that whips the NFL fans into a frenzy as we welcome in producer Gary Hayes for the mailbag. Gary, what you got for us?
Hi, Neil. How are you? Yeah, I'm good. Before we get into the questions, I've got a little clip to play, if that's all right. So when you talk about being whipped into a frenzy, I hope this will whip you into a frenzy because I'm about to hand my notice in.
What?
Yeah, well, listen.
Gary, if you want to be my offensive coordinator, you can do that. I appreciate your attention to detail.
The only problem is that I talked to Neil going, oh, this offensive lineman. He's like, no, that's a cornerback. Oh, right. Okay, sorry.
Coach's football knowledge ends at Jerry Maguire, so let's just leave it with the the producing skills.
I do apologise.
All good.
All right.
You heard it here first, Neil. I am the new... What was the position he offered me again? I forgot.
Offensive coordinator.
Offensive coordinator.
You can't even say it, let alone do it.
I was so excited.
Honestly.
I completely forgot. So handing my notice in, I'm heading off to Indianapolis. I'm gone.
I know this is a life of protocols and rules at the moment, but I've got a new protocol for our interviews. I don't know how you're going to feel about it, but how about you don't speak to the guests at all? Unless... they need to have their cameras set in a certain place.
Yeah, so for context, what it was is that we were trying to get it, because he was doing it on an iPad, so we were trying to get him to set the shot up properly. And a bit of the clip I took out was you going, oh, don't worry, coach, I've got my laptop stacked on loads of board games.
See, the best thing about that is what I do, taking the listener behind the scenes and the viewer behind the scenes, I'm good cop, right, in those situations. So I'm always like, looks good to me, I'm absolutely fine with it. Knowing full well you're not, but I don't have to be the one that's telling the coach, move your laptop, move it now, move this, do that. That's your job. And so, you know, there are times when you have to talk to them, but you don't have to talk to them that much.
I mean, yeah, right. And he was very gracious about it as well, and then offering me the job, which
he quickly wanted to move on, though, didn't he? You could tell.
Well, when he realised I didn't know the difference between a cornerback and a linebacker or whatever it was.
There were two ends of a football and you didn't know one end from the other, yeah. But it's good. I think it's, you know, it's all options for you moving forward, because, you know, you need to have these abilities to branch out.
Well, I've got and career honestly, opportunities.
Honestly, if you were the offensive coordinator of the Indianapolis Colts this year, I would watch. I'd pay good money to see how you put Carson Wentz in a position to succeed at quarterback.
I'd be like, Carson Wentz, pass it to Philip Rivers.
Should we move on?
Yeah, we should move on. Let's get some questions. I can't even speak. Questions
I've
from
got
people.
Questions now. I've got many questions, but we'll take them offline.
We're going to have questions from people who actually know what they're talking about. And this is from Tayyib Abu from Twitter. And he says, Neil, who's under more pressure, Drew Lock or Daniel Jones?
They're both under pressure, but I think the expectation is greater on Daniel Jones. He's playing in New York for the Giants. You know, I think Drew Lock's in a real situation where he's fighting, especially in training camp, fighting for his job. You know, they brought in Teddy Bridgewater in Denver. I don't think either Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater, though, are anything more than the guy before they get the next guy, whoever that is. You know, are they going to trade for Aaron Rodgers eventually? Are they going to trade for Deshaun Watson? I don't feel like Drew Lock's got a firm handle on the job anyway. Daniel Jones was a top 10 draft pick. You know, he's expected to do really, really good things. And he's been a turnover machine. He's lacked poise under pressure. He's got tremendous ability, athletic, and ability to throw the football. But he hasn't really shown it enough yet. And now that he's going to run out of excuses, because the Giants got themselves a very good rookie wide receiver in Kadarius Toney. They brought in Kenny Golladay. They've got Saquon Barkley back at running back, Evan Engram at tight end. You know, he's got weapons now. And so I'd say Daniel Jones is under more pressure.
Okay. Now, a question from someone called Michael the Lover. I think that's his Friday night name.
Got a Friday night name?
No, I'm just plain old Gary. I'm very vanilla, unlike Michael, clearly.
Michael's backing himself. Let's just leave it at that.
He's got a good question, actually, because Detroit Lions, new quarterback this year with Jared Goff. There's knowledge for you, Neil. He says, Detroit Lions, any hope for us this season?
I think it's going to take some time now in Detroit. I think the quarterback swap benefits the Rams more. I want to see what Matthew Stafford does with Sean McVay. I'm not sure. Yeah, look, Jared Goff was the first overall pick in the 2016 NFL draft. If he'd been anywhere remotely successful and to what the Los Angeles Rams wanted him to be, he'd still be in LA. And he's not. He's in Detroit. I think he's got a lot to prove this year. I don't know if he's going to be the new head coach Dan Campbell's cup of tea, so to speak. I don't think the weapons around him, they lost Kenny Golladay at wide receiver. They lost Marvin Jones at wide receiver. They do have a good tight end in TJ Hockenson. But, you know, there's not that much to work with. I think the Lions are going to struggle this year. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what Dan Campbell does as head coach, because I think he's going to just have it approach it a different way. But I see you can say you can bite all the kneecaps you want to bite. That was the sound bite that came out of his opening press conference. You need players to help you do that, and I don't think the Lions have nearly enough difference makers on either side of the ball, so I'm saying they're going to struggle.
Walking into that Lions locker room, how would you feel as Jared Goff, once the golden boy of the Rams?
Yeah, your confidence is shot a bit, isn't it? You know, you're really on a down, and you've got to try and pick that back up. And, you know, I don't know if I'm not convinced by the way he carries himself, the way he plays at times. He's going to have to show us now. And it's quite a long road back for Goff and an even longer one back for the Lions.
It's interesting because you look back to that series of All or Nothing with the Rams and he was the first round pick and I think it was Case Keenum was their starting quarterback and all the fans are calling for Goff. And now suddenly, a few years later, he's gone.
It's honestly, they move on from quarterbacks now quicker than ever. And I think that's going to be something that carries on in future years. You come in, you need to make an impression, you need to win early. And if you don't, then I think you're going to get moved on. And Goff is a very, very high profile example of that.
Right. So moving on ourselves nice and swiftly, Neil. Last question. I think our listeners and your followers need to start giving us their real names because this guy is Muchie 1969. I don't know what your first name is, Muchie, but there you go. We're on nickname terms already. He says, Neil, as a long-suffering Bengals fan, just wondering how you think we'll go this year. I'm hoping for playoffs.
Seems a long time ago since the Bengals were getting into those playoffs every year and losing in the first round. You might take that now. Head coach Zach Taylor's won six of a possible 32 games in charge of the Bengals. They haven't had a playoff win since the 1990 season, I think it was. It has been the doldrums, but their attack is going to be exciting to watch. You've got Joe Burrow coming back at quarterback, coming off the torn knee ligaments. Their line is a question mark. I like Joe Mixon at running back. They draft Jamar Chase, who's now going to reunite with Burrow in the pros, and they've got Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins. They combined for nearly 1,800 yards last year as a duo. So there's a lot to suggest they're going to score points. I don't know how strong they're going to hold up on defense. They were the worst in the NFL in 2018 and then 26th ranked in the last two seasons. So I worry about that side of the ball. I think they'll take steps in the right direction, but I don't think they'll be a playoff team. So I think Burrow makes them head in the right direction, but it's only first steps back to respectability. There's a long way to go for them as well.
Okay, that's a wrap on the mailbag, Neil. Who have we got coming up next week on episode 3?
So next week, because we're getting close to now, there'll be the Hall of Fame induction weekend, which is fantastic in Canton, Ohio. The guys that have been selected for pro football immortality, if you will, they get their gold jackets, they get enshrined into the Hall of Fame. It's a great weekend. I've been there. I saw Dan Marino and Steve Young get inducted into the Hall of Fame. So we're going to speak to the newest member of the Hall of Fame, Pittsburgh Steelers guard Alan Faneca. So looking forward to that one. Hope you can join us for that next week. Remember, tell your friends about the podcast, so you can go back and listen to all of season one as well. These are timeless episodes. They're stories of lives spent in football, so make sure you check out all of season one. Keep with us all the way through season two. Alan Faneca's up next. My thanks to Gary. Thanks for you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now. To the Neil Reynolds podcast. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietto. Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork, including the graphics and videos across our social media channels. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. If you'd like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast, help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and a review wherever you're listening. This has been another Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network. Yeah!
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.